The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. Almost everyone is having a hand at trying to predict the future today, and most prophecies for the future seem to oscillate between a couple of very widely divergent views. One of them is that you will be playing with a glittering assortment of glamorous gadgets. You'll probably have monkey's kidneys or somebody else's, an artificial heart that is supposed to work much better than your own, upon which you cannot rely. Maybe you will even have all types of computers into which you can plug your brains to improve your memory. These are the predictions by, many of the university professors of psychology, zoologists, biologists, chemists, physicists, some of those that are in the field of technology and modern science and industry that predict a glittering utopian Disneyland of pleasure for the world tomorrow. On the other hand, statesmen, government leaders, historians tell you about the population explosion. They tell you about more than 1 billion additional people on Earth by 1980. They tell you about the starving millions of people on the Earth right now. They tell you about the complete depletion of United States wheat reserves. They tell you about the failure of the aid, the food for India program, the greatest peacetime armada in the history of the world, 600 vessels sailing over there to try to feed the hungry millions of India, and how today at this precise moment, after 5 years of giving away United States wheat, there is a bigger food gap in India than there was when we started. They tell you about mounting crime and divorce, about the trends in society, about the proliferation of nuclear weapons and the fact of the imminent explosion of a red Chinese H-bomb. They tell you about the difficulty in the world tomorrow of even identifying one's antagonist in the event of a nuclear bomb war. Here are the two widely divergent points of view. Some who seem to settle back in the armchair under clouds of cigar smoke and with their portly bellies amply stuffed tell you about the wonderful world they're going to produce through science and industry. And others telling you they don't even think there's going to be a world here by 1980. It's a fantastic world in which you live. Fantastic predictions are being made, some of them rational, some of them a little bit harebrained. It's about time you saw the clear light of day and marched right on out into the future with present trends, the big trends that have meaning, not whether or not skirts are going up or down, or just exactly how the war in Vietnam is going to come out, though that is such a big concern in people's minds today. But what kind of a world will it be in 1972, in 1975, in 1980? This is 1967. Now, to give you an example from the L.A. Times, a very recent L.A. Times, was one of these typical predictions about a part of a tiny segment of society that feels it can wrap itself in its own luxurious national splendor and let the rest of the world starve and die quietly. Said a professor at a leading university in the western United States, he's a professor of engineering psychology, as a matter of fact, human beings of a century from now will be as superior to us in knowledge and abilities as we are to the cavemen. By 2067, he said, men will have begun modifying the environment for the better. Oh, that's a very fine statement to make. We will have begun by then to modify our environment for the better. Now, right now, we're modifying our environment for the worse, and apparently, if we're not going to begin to modify it for the better until 2067, we all will have long since asphyxiated ourselves in giant clouds of bilious gas from our ever more replete and dizzying assortment of mechanical gadgets and toys and our helicopters on every yard and our three automobiles in every garage. Now, he said, besides getting rid of the wastes that pollute the air and water, he will actually have begun to improve the weather. By 2067, we better get busy to do things about it a lot sooner than that, hadn't we? Now, by 2067, the idea we will have begun to modify ourselves is also purported. We may, by then, have developed artificial kidneys that will work better than the ones you're born with, artificial hearts more reliable than the real thing, artificial brains, he said. And by 2067, it may be possible to travel by teleportation. That is, you can take your cells apart, the cells of the human body, and even its personality and memories, he thought, would be transmitted from one place to another by radio. Wouldn't it be horrible if somebody unscrambled your frequencies halfway across? I mean, you could come back in any shape. You could look like a fried egg or something, just one baleful eye staring with no personality at all. Or you could end up with all your personalities in a gnat's elbow or something. I mean, this is a horrible prediction when you stop to think of it. Personality and memories, the entire cellular molecular structure of the human frame transmitted from one place to another by telephone. Isn't that fantastic? You know, I think that most people, when they read statements like this in a newspaper, don't really take them seriously. And that's the point I want to make. They should. They should. Because by the same token, few people take seriously the predictions of members of the United Nations World Health Organization, members of the various cabinet officers of the President of the United States, such as the Department of the Interior. They don't take seriously the worry in U.S. officialdom about depletion of resources and the growing numbers of mouths to feed in the have-not countries and the widening of the food gap. They don't take seriously the grim realities of the stark tragedies facing our peoples today any more than they take seriously these wild predictions of science for the future glittering glamour world of the world tomorrow of science and industry. It's about time we began to take seriously some of the trends that are around us today, because we have set in motion a deadly trend of events that is leading toward our collective national collapse. And we haven't, apparently, the wit to see it. Every one of the great reasons cited by Edward Gibbon for the decline and the fall of the mighty Roman Empire is right now everywhere evident among our peoples. Today, we're afraid of our own shadow. We're bending willy-nilly before an imaginary world public opinion that does not exist. We're cowed by a riot here. We're set running by a demonstration there, by a flag burning somewhere else, by an anti-American or an anti-British slogan somewhere. And while Britain is being urged to give away Gibraltar by the United States, which wants to keep her bases in Spain, because after all, doesn't Britain expect the United States to make the Indian Ocean United States territory now to protect instead of Britain spending her millions and her money on it? So you can see the apparent reasoning for that. After all, the United States got kicked out of Turkey and North Africa and a few other places you can mention. And the British got kicked out of Colombo in Ceylon and quite a few other places you can mention, among them, and of all starkly terrifying situations, Suez, if we realized really what that meant. And as a result of the closing down of these bases and being kicked out of this and that nation, the United States feels its back is against the wall with regard to its policy of containment of Soviet missiles in the event of a nuclear bomb war, and it must maintain its strategic air command bases in Spain. But the Spanish want Gibraltar. But the United States wants to keep its bases in Spain. But the British don't want to give up Gibraltar. But the United States is expected by Britain to take a great share of Britain's defense load. So the United States probably, at least I could offer my opinion, would feel like saying, well, why don't we strike a deal? We'll defend the Indian Ocean as well as we're able, and you get out of Gibraltar. Now, I did a couple of on-the-spot broadcasts from Gibraltar not long ago in which I identified just where that unbelievable tower of limestone came from and what is it doing jutting up there in that illogical location. I'll talk about that more in this program a little bit later. Little do we realize in the United States and Britain and Canada and Australia that we have been given our national greatness, given our national inheritances, our possessions, our raw materials. Little do we realize the great reason why the two great English-speaking peoples have between them possessed virtually every single strategic land pass, sea gate, island possession, and vital peninsula over the broad face of this earth. We don't seem to realize we have been given our national inheritances, and that all of history is nothing more than a study of how a great master plan for ultimate peace has been working out. You may not realize that one full third of the Bible is prophecy, and that much of that prophecy is being fulfilled today. Now, I know that many people are interested in a lot of wild and weird speculation. In this day of hallucinogens, escapism, and self-indulgence, There are enough freaks, nuts, boobs, and self-styled prophets to stand your hair on end who will give you every weird, nutty notion about the future you can imagine. But that doesn't cut any ice with reality. These ideas about UFOs and people taking a trip to Venus and back with some kind of a receiver wired to their forehead, which I happened to see on television not so long ago, some guy was actually telling one of these fellas in a talk program he was going to Neptune, Uranus, or Venus or somewhere. Of course, the fellow said, so long, see you later, have a good trip. But it just shows you that people are indulging themselves in a lot of weird ideas today. But what about the really big trends? What about the big news? The course of whole nations, kingdoms, and empires. What about the outcome of present-day conditions? The big map-changing, world-altering, little suspected events that really matter, that are going to alter the course of your life. These, believe it or not, accept it or not, like it or not, are revealed in the pages of Bible prophecy. And one of the greatest keys to understanding Bible prophecy is, first of all, believing and proving to yourself there is a God, and secondly, that the Bible is His Word, and thirdly, to get the key to unlock the identity of the big powers of the earth today. Primarily Russia, the United States, Great Britain, Germany, the big powers that really matter on the earth today, so far as I'm speaking of power politics, the nuclear powers, and so on. But whether you understand it or not, these things that I have been saying on the World Tomorrow program that we've been putting in the Plain Truth magazine for years and years will happen. It's not some secret inside information that's not available to you. You're going to see them happen. You're going to live them. You're going to see them occur. Now, world leaders talk of world government, and they know that world government is the only solution to the ills of mankind, but they also admit world government in the hands of man is absolutely impossible. Few people seem to realize the Bible talks about world government, that it talks about a great governing family. It even describes the potential offices and positions of many of them. It talks about their abilities and their special proclivities to suit them for a job to rehabilitate this world in the world tomorrow. It talks about a combination of the events that you see predicted in your newspapers. Number one, it's true that humans, a century from now, will be as superior to us in knowledge and abilities as we are to the cavemen, although there weren't any cavemen, at least not in the way you're thinking of it. Oh, sure. Some people have lived in caves. But they were kind of poverty-stricken and ignorant. And when you get the straight of history, you'll find it's not quite the way a lot of people have imagined that it is. But it's true. It's true that a century from now, people will have infinitely more intelligence, true intelligence, than they do today. But it's not true that you're going to have somebody else's kidneys. Of course, you and I will long since have had decided for us whatever's to be decided, won't we, before a century from now, so we won't have to worry about that. You ask someone, however, about the world government in the Bible, about Christ, about His return, about a resurrection, and you'll have all kinds of ideas. You ask someone, do you believe in God? And he might say, the chances are, yes, but he believes in the God of his own image. He believes in his own private God, his idea of God, his traditional God, his hip-pocket Betty-by-childhood God, an imaginary God within him. There are enough nutty ideas about God in this world to wallpaper every insane asylum on the earth with 10-point type. And you still can't describe the truth about God unless you go to the Bible and you ask yourself, forgetting what people think, what are the absolute proofs? Is there a God and can you prove it? What would you accept as proof of God? A lot of people say, well, if he talks to me. Well, you don't want to listen to some kind of a story like that. Why don't you go to the book, which claims to tell you about God, to identify the big powers of today, to tell you exactly what they're going to be doing and what's happening to them, and then find out whether or not those things are coming to pass. Does the God live who said ancient Tyre, Persia, Egypt, Syria, Rome, Babylon would fall? Does the God live today who gave to our peoples and said he would the Panama Canal, Suez, Gibraltar, Straits of Malacca, the Khyber Pass, the Skagerrak and the Hawaiian Islands, the Aleutians, the Falklands, the Andamans, the tip of Africa and the coastlands of the world, does that God live? Now that same God said we are going to lose those possessions if we do not obey Him, if we lose sight of His laws, His customs, if we lose sight of His commandments and we live in a way that appeals to us. All right, let's just take this simple test then. Do we, as peoples and nations, keep God's Ten Commandments? Why, of course not. We're sick with sin. We're sour with sin. We're rank with pollution. We're a reeking stench of crime, of divorce, of sickness, of self-indulgence, of perverseness, pornography, and perversion. Why, in some of our nations and cultures, we've even legalized some of the most perverse acts of human beings you could begin to dream up in your worst pickle and olive nightmare after eating too much at midnight. You can't begin to assess the moral and spiritual filth of our nations. It's piled up to become a stench in God's nostrils. That's what he says in his word. Let's at least admit this together. We don't keep his commandments nationally. Now, I know a number of people who are striving with God's help to observe God's Ten Commandments. But, you know, here's the amazing thing about prophecy. You can look in the Bible and see where God says, if we keep his commandments, we're going to have secure to us plenty of possessions, national blessings, rain in due season, good crops, blessings of our wombs, as he said, meaning a complete absence of all of these sicknesses and diseases of the various congenital deformities of thalidomide babies and high infant mortality rates, of the terrible problems of deaf children, blind children, and twisted and deformed little babies that are born, of the fantastic problems of illegitimacy, of epidemic proportions of venereal disease among our teenagers of today, of this complete senseless kind of a sinking into a vortex of emotional and spiritual and mental sickness where our peoples can do nothing more than sit back and carp and gripe about conditions but don't have the wits and how to change them. We're so defeated. We're in such a vacuum of lack of purpose, of being disappointed and frustrated because the great vaunted power of the United States can't win a battle in a slimy bog the size of Florida against a nation that it can't identify, in a battle that isn't even a declared war, with one arm tied behind its back, incidentally. And our world public opinion is so dwindled that the image of the United States is a tattered, tarnished, would-be sort of a thing where people simply hate the very flag and the sound and the taste of the United States around the world. Now, don't tell me that isn't true. I've traveled in many parts of the world, and I see it, I live with it, and I experience it. But it's about time we began to ask ourselves why. I said, take a simple test. Well, take it. Do we keep the Ten Commandments? No. Are we getting the curses? Yes. These prophecies of the Bible said our territorial possessions would be stripped away. Said our strength would be drained away. Said it would be spent in vain. Has it been? Well, why don't you listen to this statement from William S. Gaud, who is administrator of America's Agency for International Development, that's called AID. He said the great American grain surpluses, once an embarrassment of riches for America, are all but gone. He was speaking at the American Medical Association's third conference on international health at the LaSalle Hotel in Chicago, and he said that if present trends continue, by 1980, 1 billion mouths will be added to those areas of the world least able to feed them. The developing countries are losing ground in their race to produce food for the massive surge in population, he said. Last year, the amount of food produced for each person in the developing nations dropped 4%, and that means multiple millions of bushels of grain, even though it sounds like a minor percentage to people who are out of touch with the conditions, and it will drop further this year. The idea that the vast, almost bottomless pit of resources in the United States could go on feeding starving millions in India and Asia and around the world on and ad infinitum, year without end, has now been reappraised, and now government leaders say that was a mistake. We can't do it. And the food gap in India is worse today than it was at the beginning of the program. Now, recently, in evaluating what's happening in India, it was said in a leading weekly news publication in the United States by Dr. Brown, in poor countries, the current annual increase in food production is approximately 2%, while the population increase is 3.5%. In some areas, food production actually is falling. This is the kind of situation that I find so frightening, he said. He was asked if anything could be done to reverse the situation. He said, broadly, yes. Although I think that India has just possibly reached the point of no return. That is the point at which the problem becomes insoluble. For India to produce enough for her people, he said, she would need fertilizer in saturation quantities so much that any more wouldn't do any good. This would require a complete technology which India doesn't have. That is why, he said, I am pessimistic. Nowhere in the world, he said, are we beginning to act with enough speed. He said birth control programs are of little value in a country such as India. Now, when you look at what's happening squarely, fairly, look at it plainly, you would probably have to admit with other people that it's a little bit frightening. Did you see the cover of a recent Newsweek magazine with a jangled collection of traffic jams and people trying to get somewhere under the title, The Agony of Getting Anywhere? Do you realize that in the next few years we're going to be in the United States crowding ourselves right off the face of the land, so to speak? And again, I'm not talking about space for people to stand shoulder to shoulder, but talking about food production versus the number of mouths to feed. Now, God Almighty said terrible national calamities are coming our way unless we learn our lessons. He said our possessions would be stripped away, and they have been, and they will be. The British have lost Suez. The United States is going to give away Panama, and we have said so for years. I wrote an article from down there in 1954 when I said Panama was going to go, and it's going. Now, the British have lost, for all practical purposes, Singapore. The Dutch have lost the East Indies. When you look around the world at what the British have lost, it's a little bit perplexing and fantastic. They have dwindled from the close of World War II to one of the truly great naval powers and military powers the world had ever known, along with the United States, to, excuse me for saying so, you British, a weak third-rate power at best. Now, you know, your own government is saying that. I'm just parroting what your own government is saying, and I remember the sign that was over Piccadilly, too, that said, either exports go up or Britain goes down. The exports didn't go up, so they took the sign down. What's that mean? Now, if it hadn't been for a little bit of help by the American dollar to save the British pound, the four world bankers, about a year and a half ago, there would have been a crisis out of all proportion. Of recent years, when you look at what is happening to the overseas possessions of the United States and of Great Britain, these are prophecies being fulfilled. And I want to show you that prophecy because it is absolutely staggering when you see the accuracy of it. And it's found back in the 26th chapter of the book of Leviticus, in the first part of your Bible, Leviticus 26, where God said, if we obeyed, we would have everything we really want and look for. Oh, I don't care how modern you are. I don't care how chic you are. You still eat the flesh of cattle and carrots that come out of the ground. And you still hold up your trousers with the skin of a cow and wrap your shoes in them, or like as not snake or alligator skin. I don't care how far removed we think we are from the caveman. We live and breathe and eat and have our movement and our being and our continued existence because of our dependence upon air, water, and the food that comes out of the ground. And God said, if we obeyed, we would eat to the full, we would have good health, we would have peace, we would have an absence of crime, an absence of military conscription, an absence of heavy taxation, that we would have all the blessings that we really want. But he said, if you don't obey, then what would we have? He said, mounting disease. Talked about consumptive diseases in verse 16 of that 26th chapter. And he said, finally, in verse 19 of that chapter, I will break the pride of your power. That has been broken. That was broken in 1950. That's a fact. It was broken in 1950. You saw a complete reversal in the course of the world in 1950 when it was announced the Russians had exploded a hydrogen bomb. Old Uncle Sam began acting like a little scared child running at the sound of a gun, or scared of his own shadow ever since. He said, I will break the pride of your power, and the pride in our power has been broken. Korea was not won. Vietnam is not going to be won. It will not be a war that will be decisive enough to be said that the United States won it. Everybody that goes over there and comes back says, I'm pessimistic. I suppose that many of the men over there are feeling the same way. Then he went on to say, I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. That's a description of famine. Now, we find that 80% of the crop in the United States, wheat crop that is, the staple of life, 80% of it is winter wheat. That means it's already in the ground. And then when you read the weather reports and you find out that much of that may not mature and much of it's already been destroyed and been delayed, that the crop is going to be way off because of severe storms, you begin to wonder. Now follows a specific prophecy that has been fulfilled and is being fulfilled right now on our people. And your strength shall be spent in vain. That's not just money. You can't eat money. When you spend your strength in vain, you're giving away your food. You're giving away your national resources. And we're spending our strength in vain. And we're doing it for no good purpose. Oh, it's right and good that we have pity. It's right and good that we're magnanimous and altruistic. It's right and good we want to stave off starvation in other countries. That's a very commendable attitude. It's too bad we can't do it everywhere, isn't it? It's right and good that we would want to avoid all the fantastic infant mortality in Asia and India and Africa and Central and South America. Yet, in spite of not being able to do this, we still find ourselves in the grip of a fantastic population explosion. But what is happening to us around the world, even those nations on which you could hang the label paid for with American dollars, as the Bible says, our lovers are turning against us. The nations that are given the bulk of the aid in terms of millions and ultimately billions of dollars and in millions of bushels of grain rarely, if ever, support United States policies. And out of it all, you don't see very much good news. That's the point. Only thing you see in the world today seems to be bad news. Bad weather, governments divided against themselves, governments divided between and among themselves, the world divided against itself, a giant arms race, mounting crime. I know that temporarily, on a nice Sunday afternoon in the residential district of your city, it might look pretty nice. That doesn't change the statistics and the facts and the way conditions really are. Now, out of it all, there is going to be some good news, but that good news is rejected by most people because they simply will not accept it from the source of Almighty God. They won't listen to His Word. And many people today are spiritual cowards. They're afraid to prove it. They're afraid to put it to the test. They're afraid they might find out the great God who gives them every breath of air that they breathe really does live. That the God who predicted the downfall of ancient empires has also foretold the future course of Britain and the United States and of every other nation on earth. And that right now those events are beginning to come to pass. If you want to find out whether or not God exists, then write for this booklet, Does God Exist? And the one on the proof of the Bible. Now, every number of the Plain Truth magazine are articles on the subject that have to do with whether or not you can prove God or whether or not evolution is true. In the current number is the fable of the first fatal flight. It is strange, say evolutionists, and most people would think it is strange. They say that birds and reptiles are the closest living relatives. That the closest living relatives to your birds today are crocodiles. This article agrees that that is quite strange. But is it logical, and can you prove it? This goes hand in hand with these articles on Does God Exist? Now, in the current number is this article on 1966, the year of violence. The one on inside communist Romania. The one on Where is Germany Headed Now? An article from On the Spot with de Gaulle in the South Pacific. And it's free of charge and no price. And request also the booklet on The World Tomorrow, What Will It Be Like? The World Tomorrow, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, by the title of this program. It shows you exactly what you can expect in the fulfillment of these prophecies in the next few years. It's free of charge and no price if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.